This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Scheduled to catch up with Elliot Johnson in a few moments, former big leaguer. Also give away some River Dog tickets coming up as well. And I'll let you know which teams in the NFL could take a step back and take a step forward this year. Get to all that coming up here in this final hour. The Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. Baker Roofing has been in business for over 100 years. They're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S., and they provide residential and commercial roofing. In 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com. Also, for more information, to check out their incredible history, or to see all the different roofing types that are available, check them out online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. You can also find the show on demand at charlestonsportsradio.com or through our free app where the podcasts are always available. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store today. I started the show by talking about last night's NBA Finals with Game 4, where the Milwaukee Bucks got a nice come-from-behind victory to win at home to even the series. And it's nothing too complex or out there. Right, maybe it's a little bit of a Captain Obvious take, but this series for the Bucks will come down to Chris Middleton, and for the Suns will come down to Chris Paul. Chris Middleton, Charleston's own, was excellent last night with 40 points. And the Bucks are better when Middleton is playing at his best, but specifically, the Bucks are better when the offense is being funneled through Chris Middleton. That makes them more dynamic, makes them better, makes them a better offense and team than when Giannis is running the show. And when Giannis goes for 30-plus points, the Bucks this year weren't much better than 500, 15-10. In the playoffs, same story, 7-4. But when Chris Middleton goes for 30-plus points, the Bucks are 8-2. In the postseason, they haven't lost. They're 5-0 when Middleton goes for 30-plus. Not only do they need that second score, that second star that Middleton can provide them from time to time, but also they're just a better functioning team when Middleton is the leader of the offense. And last night, Giannis didn't take a shot for the last almost 4 minutes. Middleton scored all the points. He outscored the Suns in the final 2.5 minutes. The offense was being directed through him. He played great, and the Bucks got a big win to even the series. But the reason why, for Milwaukee, the rest of this series will come down to Chris Middleton is because he's played really well at home, but not on the road. And that's what role players do. That's why they're just role players and not the stars, because you can't count on them every night. They're not consistent enough. And usually they play better at home where, quite frankly, it's easier to play than going on the road. And when you look at Chris Middleton and you look at his splits this year, it's been an issue all season for him. He shoots much better at home. From beyond the arc alone, he shoots 47% at home. From downtown, making almost half of his threes. But on the road, only 36%. An 11% change, right, from home to road, from beyond the arc. Field goal percentage, same idea. And it's not just this year, but it's been over a number of years. You're more comfortable at home. You got the crowd behind you. But when you go on the road, it's a different animal. That's where Middleton has struggled. And if the Bucks want to win this series, they'll have to win one of the two games left in Phoenix. And in order to win that game, you'll have to get a pretty good performance out of Chris Middleton. On the Phoenix side of things, if Chris Paul is going to play like he did last night, then the Suns are in big trouble. And credit Milwaukee for making some changes and adjusting how they handle Chris Paul. But I do think a large part of what we've seen from Chris Paul as he continues to decline with each game of this series, I think that it's because he's wearing down. He's now 36. He's played over 500 minutes this postseason. He's only missed four games the last 2 years in the regular seasons. He's played a lot of minutes throughout his career, throughout this year, throughout this postseason. And he's just the second guard over the age of 35 to play more than 500 minutes in a postseason. This is only the second time we've seen somebody that age play that much in these big moments of the postseason. And as we reach the NBA Finals, Chris Paul, if you look at his numbers from each game, they have gotten worse. He played great in Game 1, 32 points, and everyone was talking about, oh, Chris Paul, top 5 point guard of all time. But since then, the points have gone down from 32 to 23 to 19 to 10. The shooting has gone down. He made 4 threes in Game 1. He's made 4 since. Went from 4 to 3 to 1 to 0 threes last night. Field goal, same idea, 12 to 10 to 8 to 5 percentage. 63 down to 57, 38% last night. Everything has declined in this series for Chris Paul from one game to the next. And I think just because he continues to get more and more tired throughout this series. And without Chris Paul, if he can't play well, last night he struggled, he turned the basketball over a bunch. If he plays like that last night, if he continues to play that way, then the Suns can be in big trouble. Because Devin Booker is not enough. As well as he's playing, he's not enough for Phoenix to win. You need your leader, your point guard, and when that point guard doesn't play well, it influences and can affect the rest of the team. Just like when the quarterback's off his game. If you ever watch your team, Gamecocks, Clemson, your NFL team, the Falcons, you watch a game, the NFL, the quarterback is just off that day. Misfiring, not making the proper read, you're like, oh, we're in big trouble today. Right? Matt Ryan doesn't have it today. How are we going to win this game? Or same idea, pitcher, especially when it's your ace. You put Jacob deGrom on the mound. Back in the day, you put like a Greg Maddux on the mound. Big game pitcher, and he just doesn't have his stuff that night. You're thinking, oh boy, how are we going to win this game? Now, this is going to be a struggle. Maddux doesn't have his stuff. And it's the same idea with a point guard. When a point guard's struggling like that, you're looking around thinking like, oh boy, how are we going to win this game? Chris Paul doesn't have his A game with him. And he's supposed to be our floor general, our leader, running the offense. And he doesn't have it tonight. Chris Paul averaged just one turnover in each of the first two rounds of the playoffs. He is averaging over 4 turnovers per game here in the NBA Finals. And I think that's another sign of getting a little tired. When you get a little more careless with the basketball, when you're turning it over, we saw him last night go with that crossover. He just fell down, lost the basketball. The Suns were down 2. They were trying to tie it with about 30 seconds to go. Chris Paul turns it over. The Bucks go down, get the winning basket. They go 4. That was the game. And I think that's a sign also of the wearing down. The shooting isn't as strong. The turnovers are going up. He's not playing as well. He's played a lot of minutes. It's a banged-up body. An older man playing a ton of minutes here in the postseason. And if Chris Paul can't bounce back, that would be the biggest concern for the Suns. He played great in Game 1 of the NBA Finals, but also because of his positive COVID test. You know, he had to miss a few games. The Suns also had a bunch of time off because they always finish their series before their opponent. So going into the NBA Finals, Chris Paul had played 4 games in about a month prior to that. So, of course, he was going to come out, be sharp in Game 1, play well. And then he's played 37 minutes, 41 minutes, 34 minutes, last night 37 minutes. And with each game, each passing game, he's getting worse and worse. Maybe it's even related to the COVID diagnosis. I have no idea. But a 36-year-old playing all these minutes at the end of this long career, and it just seems like the further we go, the more he's wearing down. And if Chris Paul can't bounce back in the next 3 games, then the Suns will be in big trouble. Chris Middleton is the key for the Bucks, specifically on the road. Chris Paul's the key for the Suns. He just has to play better than last night. And I know I'm not breaking any news here, but those are the two guys that it'll come down to. And that's what these NBA Finals are about. You can really help yourself out, or you can really hurt yourself. If you play well, even in a losing effort, but if you play really well, changes how people think about you. If you play poorly, that changes how people think about you as well. This is an opportunity now, 3-game series. Giannis, Middleton, Chris Paul, they can really influence how we think about them moving forward. And it's going to come down to Middleton and Chris Paul on each side. If Middleton plays well, Bucks win. He and Giannis, they're the heroes. They have a championship. Chris Paul plays well. The Suns will win. They'll get a championship. And then we could go back to those conversations of top 5 point guard all time. But Paul's going to have to play better than last night. And for as good as Middleton played from right here in Charleston, he was great last night. He's also going to have to do it on the road if the Bucks want to win this series. Because it's going to take a road win. And in order to get that road win, it's going to take a good performance out of Middleton. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500. Let's go to the phones. Greg is with us. Greg, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I don't get to call much, but I listen all the time, man. You got a good show. I enjoy it.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
But, yeah, I want to talk about Giannis's block a little bit. Everybody's this morning listening to ESPN Radio. It's the greatest block in finals history, and it matches LeBron's famous block. But and I have an answer for that. But in addition to, I think they were talking about who else could have ever pulled off a block like that. I don't think it's kind of crazy how fast they forget about Olajuwon. I mean, that guy he stuffed Barkley's, he stuffed the Robinsons, he stuffed Shaq, he stuffed Ewing, he stuffed everybody, sometimes three times per possession, and they don't give him any credit. I don't want to hang up now, but I'm driving, but I just want your thoughts on Team Olajuwon and his block. Thanks, man.
Yeah, appreciate you. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate the kind words. Give us a call anytime, Greg. Well, let me just say right off the top, we're all prisoners of the moment, and I'm guilty of this as well, but I can be aware of it, and I try to limit it. But we do it all the time in this industry, and sports fans in general because we're passionate, but in this industry. We come on the air the next day, that's the best we've ever seen. Oh, that was the greatest. We're just emotional. I don't know. We're looking for something to talk about maybe. I don't know why it happens, but in this industry, broadcasters, that's always our reaction. It's like Bob Gibson, I think, said it about great catches in baseball. A great catch is like a pretty woman. Right, it's the best one until the next one comes along. He said something along those lines. That's the best catch you'll ever see until the next one. Then you say, that's the best catch. And it's the same idea with, pretty women on the street. One walks by, you think, oh my goodness. Right, that's the most beautiful woman I ever saw. Then another one walks by. Oh, she's even more beautiful. That's the most beautiful woman. And so we're the same way with really everything in sports. He is the best point guard we've ever seen. Oh, that was the best play. And watch, after game five, we'll do it about something else. It's just the way we are. So the Giannis block, look, it was a great block, no doubt. It was a tremendous block in a huge moment. But yes, I see a lot of people that oh, that's the best block we've ever seen. Let's calm down. Let's relax. Now, the LeBron James block is better because that was game, if I remember correctly, LeBron was game 7 of the NBA Finals and it was the final 2 minutes. Giannis, that was a huge block because if you lose, and that would have been a big basket, and you lose that game, you fall down 3-1. So it's a huge play, no doubt. And it's a great play that I didn't think, you're watching it as the play unfolds, you think, no way Giannis is going to pull that off. Much like LeBron. But the LeBron block, if I remember correctly, was game 7 in the final 2 minutes. And it was a tied game. So in terms of what it means, I think that's bigger. Now, if you want to go back, there's been tons of great shot blockers over the years. Olajuwon would be one. And we know Olajuwon won his 2 finals, right? When Jordan stepped aside, it's similar to this year. When Jordan stepped aside and went to go play baseball, it was like, okay, let's find out who the second best player in the league is. We know Jordan's the greatest. But now that we remove Jordan, let's see who else can actually win. And Olajuwon won both years that Jordan was out. And I was like, okay, you know what? Right, outside of Jordan, Olajuwon may be the next best guy in the league. Jordan's the one keeping him back. But Olajuwon had some ridiculous blocks back in the day. Now, you could go watch videos on YouTube of the blocks he had. But Olajuwon, not only that, and he had some big blocks in the NBA playoffs. He had a big one against Penny Hardaway at the rim. Rejecting him at the rim in the NBA Finals that year, 94, I think that was. So Olajuwon had some big blocks, and he was a great rim protector and a great player. And the other one I would also say is Patrick Ewing, because I always think back to Patrick Ewing in college, so I know it's not the NBA. But when Ewing was in college, and he had a ton of blocks in the NBA as well, no doubt. And Ewing was a good shot blocker as well. But Ewing, in that NCAA championship, when he intentionally, in some of the cases, when he had like 4 goaltends in the first 10 minutes of that game, but he didn't care. He was just trying to set the tone. Anything around him, he was just swatting it away from the rim. If you go back and watch that, and the game's on YouTube. I watched it not too long ago. If you go back and just watch the first like 10 minutes, right, it's ridiculous. Anything close to the rim, even when it's clearly goaltending, Ewing was just trying to set the tone, and he was just swatting it away. Back in, what was that, 84 or 82? Right, with the goaltends, yeah, 82, right? And so Ewing is another one that I always think of when you talk about shot blockers. And go back to even his days at Georgetown. He set the tone in the national championship. Like, you're not going to come into this lane. Anyone close, I'm swatting it out of here. And that was in a national championship game, and he had some big blocks there. So we could talk great shot blockers. In terms of great plays, what Giannis did last night is up there. It was a great play in a big moment. But it's not the best. If anyone says that's the best block we've ever seen, no, I disagree. I think even the LeBron James block from a couple years back, from about 4 or 5 years ago, is more impressive. And I'm sure if you look hard enough, you could find other big-time blocks over the years as well, because there have been tons of shot blockers. Olajuwon on his way to his NBA Finals. Ewing over the course of his career. Just to name two off the top of my head. And there's been plenty. Ben Wallace, I'm sure, had some big blocks when the Pistons won the championship 17 years ago. But that was a big play. When that play unfolded, I thought, no way. And I'll be honest with you, I had money on the Suns last night. It was the first time I've bet in the NBA playoffs in two rounds. And I had the Suns last night. So when that play happened, I was, oh, my goodness, right? I thought, no way. Ayton's got a lob. He's going to put this in. It would have been a huge bucket for the Suns. Giannis comes over and blocks it. And I was as dejected and rejected as Ayton was at the time. It was a great play. But I don't think it's the best block we've ever seen. And I've heard that opinion from some. I just think we become prisoners of the moment. We wake up the next day. And the other part of it, too, is that it's kind of required in this industry is that these series are so long. But it's our job to come on the next day and have a reaction to it. Sometimes the reaction is just, hey, it's a long series. Let's see what happens. And that was kind of my reaction after game one of this NBA Finals. The Suns won, and I said, I don't take much away from it. The Bucks usually lose game one, then they make adjustments. Let's see what happens. But it's also kind of part of the job that you have to come on the next day and have a big opinion, take away something from last night. Sometimes you watch a game, and it's just, the better team won. There really isn't a takeaway. There really isn't a big opinion to come from it. Just you watch a game, and you thought, both teams play well. The better team won. But you have to come up with something. So a lot of the people come on the next day, oh, that was the most amazing thing we've ever seen. We can be very hyperbolic in this industry. So that's part of it, too, is that you have to come up with something. And sometimes there's not always something there. Now, last night was a big game, but you come away, a lot of people are saying, oh, Giannis, that's the great block, the best block we've ever seen. Cool it. We've seen some great blocks over the years. But it was one hell of a play. We'll see if we ever link up with Elliot Johnson. I was looking forward to talking to him because he's quite the funny guy and he does great impressions. And I was going to put him on the spot. Maybe that's why he didn't call us, because he knew, well, if I call this guy, he's going to make me do some of my great impressions. We'll see if we ever link up with Elliot here this afternoon or this week. But nonetheless, we'll give away the tickets now anyways. I was going to give away these two tickets at this point, and we'll still do it. I got two tickets to the River Dogs game Saturday night, this Saturday, against the Green Jackets. It's at Joe Riley Park, 6:05 first pitch. I got a pair of tickets. You have to come pick them up here at the station, but you'll have some time to come grab them for Saturday's game. And by the way, Saturday, they'll be dropping bouncy balls onto the field out of a helicopter, and if your number matches up with the number that lands on home plate, you can win a bunch of money. So not only is it a good baseball team, should be a nice night on Saturday, fun environment, and also a chance to make some money. So I got two tickets here, Saturday at the Joe. Third caller now, you get the two tickets to Saturday's game. 843-721-9500. 843-721-9500. Third caller now, you get two tickets to the River Dogs game on Saturday. And when we come back, I'll let you know some NFL teams that will take a step forward and take a step back this year. It's the Moore Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
It's Throwback Thursday.
What's today?
It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
I woke up feeling the sunshine drift across my face. Took me back to emotions, another time and place, those yesterdays, cruising in my Chevrolet.
Coming up, which teams will take a step forward in the NFL this year, which teams will take a step back? I'll let you know here in the Moore Midday Show. Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Congratulations to our winner, Henry, right here in West Ashley, winning a pair of tickets to the River Dogs game Saturday night. And we'll give away more tickets tomorrow on the show for the River Dogs homestand here. But Saturday night is interesting because it's Saturday's live at the Joe. So make sure, for those that won tickets or those that got their own tickets and are going Saturday, make sure you stay until the end of the game. Because after the game, they're going to have a helicopter drop thousands of bouncy balls onto the field. And if the ball with the number that matches your number, you'll get a number. And if the ball has your number on that ball and it lands on home plate, you win. They're giving away money on Saturday. So stay tuned for that after the game. It's also anime night, Japanese animation. I was never into that. And a nice Commerce local spotlight going on Saturday, 6:05 first pitch. We'll give away some more tickets for a later game during this homestand on the show tomorrow. Earlier, or in fact last segment, we were just talking about that block from Giannis. And, how could I forget? I mentioned Ben Wallace's block. I said I'm sure Ben Wallace had a big block in the playoffs when the Pistons won. How could I forget, though, that the biggest block for the Pistons didn't even come from Ben Wallace? Almost like the original chase down, Tayshaun Prince chasing down Reggie Miller. Reggie Miller was going for that layup with about 17 seconds left, would have tied the game in the NBA Finals, and Prince came out of nowhere and rejected him from behind. And Miller did that classic where you slow down to gather yourself before the layup. He thought nobody was going to catch him. And then here comes Prince from behind swatting it away. And Miller, of course, his reaction, he thought it was goaltending because he thought, no way could he have blocked that. So it wasn't even Ben Wallace. It was Prince that had the big block. That would be up there in terms of, like, biggest blocks. Horace Grant had a big one, speaking of the Phoenix Suns, in that NBA Finals in 93. Olajuwon was brought up. He had big ones. He had a big block against Starks. Then the next year against Penny Hardaway, stuffed him at the rim. So there's been a lot of great blocks. But last night was one of them for Giannis. Now, if you watched the game, you may have saw Giannis leave about 2 to 3 minutes in the game. You think, what's going on here? This was Giannis after the game explaining why, two straight games now, he's had to come out and head to the locker room early in these finals games.
Giannis, this was the second game in a row you went out early in the first quarter. I'm just curious what was going on there.
I wanted to, what the hell you guys say politely, I wanted to take a tinkle. A tinkle? Yeah. I wanted to take a tinkle, it came back. Yeah. That's polite, right? Tinkle is polite, yeah. Both games. I wanted to take a tinkle to win back.
For some reason, I can listen to Giannis say tinkle all the time. The way he pronounces that with his accent, it sounds great. He had to go take a tinkle. He wanted to say it politely. I don't know who he's hanging around with. Apparently too many like babysitters or new moms. Who says the term tinkle? Where did he pick up on that? Are people saying that in an NBA locker room? Hey, coach, I'll be right out to practice. I got to go tinkle first. I don't think I've ever said the word tinkle. Right? Maybe when I was a little kid and that's how like my parents, you got to tinkle before we go? I don't think I've ever said the word tinkle. But Giannis, that's why, you know, we can be very tough on Giannis because he's the star, but he can't shoot and he hasn't won. He's a very likable guy, though. You listen to him talk, you watch those interviews. He's always, even after losses, he's always smiling. He's got a good attitude. I remember a sound clip. Maybe it was when they fell down 2-0 in the finals or 2-0 against Brooklyn. He said, look, you know, I go home to my family. My family's the most important thing. I go home. I don't watch basketball. I want to be, you know, with my family. Then I come back here and I want to win. But he said, you know, some people may take it the wrong way, but he was just getting across that I got a lot of things, you know, I got more important things going on. I want to win, but you know, I have the perspective that I'm healthy, I'm a young guy with a family, plenty of money. I'm trying to enjoy my family as well. I want to come win basketball games, but you know, he's always a happy guy, always smiling. He's got that good accent from Greece, and when I hear that clip, it also reminds me of Arnold Schwarzenegger in like Kindergarten Cop or something, right? Trying to come up with that word and with that accent. But Giannis, the last two games, had to leave early to go take a tinkle in the locker room. My advice would be, and I'm sure it's because he's trying to hydrate, he's probably drinking a lot of liquids before the game so he doesn't cramp up or anything. But just like you would do with your kids before you go anywhere. Like ask, now Budenholzer is going to have to ask him before they leave the locker room for game five. Giannis, do you have to use the bathroom before we go? Are you sure? You want to try? When's the last time you tinkled? Are you going to be able to go out there and play? Or even I do this. I know people of a certain age have to worry about this. I'm not at that age yet, but even I do it. I always use the bathroom before bed, even if I don't feel like I have to go to the bathroom. I'll always, you know, give it a try because I don't want to, a few hours later, I don't want to wake up and have to use the bathroom. I want to sleep through the night. So I always use the bathroom before bed. Same idea. Before you go out on that floor, just use the bathroom so that you don't have to worry about coming off the court 2-3 minutes later to go use the bathroom, to go tinkle. But that's a great clip from Giannis after the game last night. They're likable. He's a likable guy. Now he just needs that championship to get the respect from everybody. All right, which teams in the NFL could take a step forward or take a step back this year? Allow me to get a little nerdy here, a little nerdier than usual. I talk a lot about point differential because I do believe it's the most important stat. And I won't bore you with all the numbers. I've ran through them on the show before, but if you go back and you look, right, all the World Series champions are always, you know, like top five in run differential. All the Super Bowl champions are about top three, top five in point differential. All the NBA champions, top 3 to 5 in point differential. It's the easiest way to figure out, to get through all the the noise and some of the BS and all the other stats and even records at times, point differential can be the easiest way to determine or to figure out who the best teams are. But it can also help you figure out who some of the lucky teams are, or unlucky. Because along with point differential, that also brings into the picture another stat called expected win-loss. And this originally all came from Bill James in the baseball world. Now it's made its way to all these other sports, and Bill James is like the godfather of analytics. But he came up with an equation that if you plugged in those numbers, it would tell you how many games you should win. So if you scored this amount of points and you allowed this amount of points, that should equal this number of wins. That's how it works. So you can then take that point differential and you can figure out, okay, this is their point differential. What should that lead to? What record should they have? And if the record, the expected win-loss, is better than their actual record, then that shows you they've had some bad luck. They've underachieved. And they've probably underachieved because some bad breaks. Vice versa. If you plug in their win differential and they have a better record than they should, you see, oh, that team's overachieving, right? They've gotten a little lucky. They've gotten some of the breaks. And I've done this on the show before, and again, I don't have all the data in front of me to bore you with, but same idea. If you look at the teams that overachieve or underachieve, they usually regress to the mean the following year. So the teams that underachieve usually then improve the next season. And the teams that overachieve usually take a step back because, again, they got some bad, they got some good breaks or bad breaks. Either way, they were either lucky or unlucky, and it's going to flip the next year. They're not going to have that same luck for two consecutive seasons. One team had a bunch of injuries. They were very unlucky. Now, you know, the way it works, they probably won't be as injured. They'll be a little luckier. So this is done using point differential and the expected win-loss from a year ago. And by doing so, you can try to find out which teams will take a step back or take a step forward. Let's first start with the teams that overachieved last year. These are teams that could take a step back. Now, what would that step be? Could be a win or two. Could be a few wins. They could still be a playoff team. I'm not saying these are teams that are going to go from first to worst. But these are teams that may take a step back, that may have their record be worse this year. They may win fewer games this year than last year. Here are the teams that overachieved last year. The team that overachieved the most, the Cleveland Browns. They won three more games than statistically they should have last year, which probably would have kept them from being a playoff team. But another analytic is DVOA. And the Browns had the second worst DVOA for any 11-win team in NFL history. So statistically, the Browns were the worst statistical 11-win team, second worst statistical 11-win team in NFL history. The Browns overachieved last year. Can they follow that up this year? I expect Cleveland to take a step back this season instead of a step forward. The other team that overachieved the most, actually the Kansas City Chiefs, which was surprising, but they won a bunch of close games. If you think back to last year, I remember talking about it on the air, that the Chiefs got off to a great start, but you could point to all these games like, yeah, but, you know, that game they almost lost, and that game they almost lost. Chiefs won a lot of close games, even with Pat Mahomes and all that talent, even though they went all the way to the Super Bowl. The defense wasn't the same. I was actually talking about some concerns for the Chiefs, that I didn't think they could just turn it on come playoff time, and they kind of did. But the Chiefs had three wins more than they should have, statistically, a year ago. So the Chiefs, are they going to miss the playoffs this year? No. But will they have maybe a couple less wins this year than last year? I could see that. History tells us that could be the case. So I think the Browns take a step back. I think the Chiefs take a step back. Elsewhere, the Seahawks overachieved by two wins last year. I could see Seattle taking a step back because every year, it always you watch the Seahawks and wonder, how is Russell Wilson getting this team in the playoffs? Then we had all the drama this offseason of Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll. Russell Wilson came out this week and said, oh, yeah, we're good, right? There's no issues there. Things seem a little off in Seattle. They overachieved last year. Their defense was lousy for most of the season. I think they'll still make the playoffs because Russell Wilson has never had a losing season, but they won't be quite as good as a year ago. They won 11 games last year. Right? I could see them maybe they're only 9-8 this year with a 17-game schedule. The Titans also achieved by two wins. The Titans have always had a flukish nature to them during this run with Tannehill and Derrick Henry. And Derrick Henry, when guys have as many carries as he did last year, they usually have a lousy follow-up season. We'll see if that's the case. And he's the most important piece to that team. The defense was historically bad last year. We'll see if it's any better for Tennessee. And they lost their offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith. We'll see if that really affects them. I could see the Titans taking a step back. The Bills also overachieved by two wins a year ago. The Dolphins were right behind them. I think the Patriots will be better. And we know Josh Allen had that incredible turnaround that nobody was seeing, or nobody saw coming. Nobody expected. So now, how can he follow that up this year? Will he be even better? Will he be the same? Will he regress a little bit? Will he fall back to earth a little bit after statistically maybe the best turnaround we've ever seen from one year to the next for a quarterback? And then lastly, the Packers overachieved by two wins last year as they went 13-3. And it's another team I'm not surprised to see on this list because Aaron Rodgers is a lot like Russell Wilson. You watch the Packers and you think, how are they winning these games? And it's just because of the quarterback. So the Packers, they overachieve really every year of Rodgers' career because that roster, the talent that they have, usually shouldn't equal the amount of wins they get. But they get those wins because of Rodgers. Now, will Rodgers be on the field for all 17 games this year? We'll see. But last year, the Packers were the number one red zone offense, not only in the league last year, but all time. And they had the fewest turnovers. So you expect those two numbers to drop back a little bit. They may not be quite as good in the red zone. They were the best all time. That's hard to match. They did not turn the football over. Rodgers rarely does, but fumbles is considered a luck stat. Maybe they'll have a few more fumbles this year. They were very fortunate last year that they didn't. Maybe they'll fumble it a little more this year. And again, I'm not saying these are teams that are going to go worst to first, but teams that just may have fewer wins this year than last year. Packers won 13 games last year. Can they follow that up this year, especially with this Rodgers drama? Teams that could take a step back this year. How big of a step? We'll find out. But the Chiefs, Browns, Seahawks, Titans, Bills, Packers, all playoff teams, by the way, and all teams that overachieved a year ago. And we know half of the playoff teams change every year. That's about half the playoff field I just gave you. So you know about half of those teams could miss the playoffs this year. I think the Browns will miss the playoffs. I think the Titans will miss the playoffs. I wouldn't be surprised if the Seahawks miss the playoffs. I wouldn't be surprised if the Bills aren't as good. The Packers aren't as good as a year ago. Now, what about the flip side? What are the teams that underachieved a year ago and therefore should take a step forward this year? I got a few of those. Let's start at the bottom. The 49ers underachieved by two wins last year. They should have had two more wins than they did. And the 49ers are an obvious pick for a turnaround team this year because they were the most injured team in the league last year. And with Jimmy Garoppolo injured, that led to the second most turnovers committed in the league last year by the Niners. That won't be the norm if you have your regular guys out there instead of backups. When you go to backups, they're not as talented. They're playing guys who are better than them. They're going to turn over the football. So the Niners had the most injuries and the second most turnovers. Just by getting guys back, just by being healthier, the Niners will be better this year. The Eagles actually underachieved by two wins last year. And I see a lot of people picking the Eagles as not a playoff team, but a trendy sleeper team that may not be one of the worst teams in the league like many believe. I'm not one of them. I don't think the Eagles will really take a step forward this year. I don't think Jalen Hurts is a starting NFL quarterback. Plus, you have this new coach who's never been a head coach before, young guy. We'll see if he can figure things out. And that defense was poor last year. They don't have a ton of playmakers. They made some moves this offseason. I just think it's one of the worst rosters in the league. So the Eagles underachieved last year, but I don't see them really taking much of a step forward this year. Much like the next team on this list, the Texans, who underachieved a year ago by two. But same idea. Especially if you tell me Deshaun Watson won't be on the field, the stats don't account for that, losing Deshaun Watson. And I don't think Deshaun plays this year. I think the Texans will be the worst team in the league this year. So even though they underachieved last year, I think they have more bad luck this year, and they have a terrible season. And then these are the two teams I wanted to focus on. In fact, three teams that I want to focus on. The last three teams I'll give you from this list and this research I did last night. The Panthers underachieved by two wins last year. So the numbers tell us the Panthers should have a better season this year. They should have more wins this year than last year, which would make sense. Year two of Matt Rhule, I think an upgrade at the quarterback position. You hope McCaffrey is back healthy. Drew Brees is out of New Orleans, so you know maybe you beat them once or twice. Get an extra win or two there. They won five games in 2019, five games last year with Matt Rhule. I think they win more than five games this year, especially since there's a 17th game. But I could see the Panthers being around 500. I think they continue to improve. They added more pieces on defense. They got the weapons on offense. I do think Carolina, remember, they lost so many close games last year because of Teddy Bridgewater. I think that will change this year. They'll win a couple of those and have a better record. I think Carolina will improve this season compared to last. The Jaguars underachieved by three games last year. They won only one game last year. Their stats would tell you they should actually be a four-win team. Now you add Trevor Lawrence. That's quite the upgrade to go from Gardner Minshew to Trevor Lawrence. Even to go from Doug Marrone to Urban Meyer, who's never done it before in the NFL, but the last eight coaches to jump from college football to the NFL actually improved that team in their first year. What they did after that, I don't know. Usually didn't work out long term, but they had quick success. Right? When Harbaugh went to the Niners, they won 7 more games in year one, made the playoffs. When Chip Kelly went to the Eagles, they won 6 more games in year one, went to the playoffs. Cliff Kingsbury won more games in year one of Arizona than the prior year. Matt Rhule won as many last year, but they had better stats. So the last 8 coaches to make that jump have turned around that team, and they've made an improvement in year one. And the Jaguars, they only won 1 game last year. You can't get any worse than that. I think the Jaguars take a big step forward, and I think they're around 500 this year. I actually have pretty high expectations for Jacksonville. And the last team I wanted to mention, the Atlanta Falcons. No team underachieved more last year than the Atlanta Falcons. And if you're a Falcons fan, you're probably not surprised. It's what led eventually to Dan Quinn's dismissal, because that team has always underachieved. They should have won the Super Bowl. They underachieved that night. They should have been better since. They've been under 500 since that Super Bowl. They have underachieved. And last year, they had 4 fewer wins than statistically they should have. That is a lot. That's the difference in a season. The Falcons instead ended up with 4 wins. They actually played like a 500 team a year ago. So the Falcons should be a team that takes a step forward. Statistically, they played as the 18th best team in the league last year, as opposed to ending up with the 3rd worst record. That was the reality. The reality was the Falcons had the 3rd worst record in the league. The numbers would tell you, they're actually like the 14th worst team in the league, 18th best. They had 4 losses last year to the Falcons when they had a win expectancy of 90% or more at one point in the game. 4 times they had a 90% chance of winning and lost. Right? You win half of those, it's a different season. You win all of those, as you probably should, it's a much different season. The Falcons underachieved last year, and I've been saying all offseason, even with the Julio Jones trade, I do think Atlanta will be better this year, simply just by making those coaching changes, by bringing in Arthur Smith and Dean Pease. I think that'll be a huge boost. And also, just kind of moving on from tragedy, for lack of a better term. I don't want to make it seem like it's a bigger deal than it is. We're just talking sports. But in the grand scheme of in the sports world, that was a bit of a tragic event when they lost 28-3, when they blew a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl. And it's almost like when you have a traumatic experience happen at home, right? They always move out of the home. Something terrible happens at that house that you think about that has affected you. You don't want to wake up in that house every day. You want to move on. It's the same thing. You get in a brutal car accident on your way to work. They tell you, take a different route, right? Go a different. You don't want to drive to that same spot. You're going to get flashbacks. You're going to have bad memories. It's going to put you in a bad, you know, take a different path to work now once you recover. Don't drive to that same spot, right? You're going to get nervous. You'll get anxious. You may be scared to drive through that intersection now. Go a different way. And so I don't want to compare real life tragedies to the football world. But for the Falcons, they're finally moving on from that quote-unquote tragedy, from that terrible event of the Super Bowl, where ever since, the whole thought process was making up for that Super Bowl, winning, trying to win that Super Bowl years later. Now you move on from Dan Quinn, Thomas Dimitrioff, fresh start, you forget about it. These guys were not here for that, at least not the personnel. I know Matt Ryan was, but you know the coaches weren't, the front office wasn't here, start new, and we move on. We're not thinking about that. These guys weren't here. Terry Fontenot doesn't care about that. He's not thinking about that every day. They're now going to try to win this Super Bowl instead of trying to win a past Super Bowl. You're finally moving on from that traumatic experience. The Falcons moved out of the house after something terrible happened. Right? And instead of waking up thinking about it every day, they can start fresh. They can start new somewhere else. That's what Atlanta's doing. And I think the Falcons have a big, maybe not big, but they have a good turnaround this year. And will be around 500 after winning only 4 games last year. I'm not telling you they're going to go win the Super Bowl, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Falcons are a playoff team this season. And those are teams that should turn it around this upcoming year in the NFL, that should take a step forward, and also some teams that should take a step back. When we come back, it is a throwback Thursday. Let's throw it back a little bit, because even though it's been the offseason, we haven't had a football game in quite some time. Apparently, we have a new sack leader in NFL history. And I'll explain why when we come back. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
Great show. You did a good job.
You're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always get these big stars and important people are on. That's great to hear, and we like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke, and I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours. Anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show. Coming up, even without games being played, we have a new sack leader in NFL history. And I'll tell you why here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio as we put a funky finish to your Throwback Thursday, throwing it back to your time going to the clubs on King Street. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast, or on demand at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. Or through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and the show is available live and on demand there.
Although around the time this song came out, most of the discotheques would have been over by the market.
Oh, okay. Well, then you go down there and have a good time. Hey, Lyerly's Dry Cleaners, now their to-go service is easier than ever before. You can pick up or deliver, or they can pick up or deliver right to your home or office. They handle shirts, suits, casual wear, as well as curtains, comforters, and regular old household laundry. Mention you heard about Lyerly's right here on ESPN Radio Charleston and get 20% off your next order. Call or text 843-377-6994 to schedule a free pickup. You can even track your dry cleaning, see exactly when it'll be ready or delivered. Lyerly's Dry Cleaners, now with their to-go service. Easier than ever before. Hey, you can also listen to the show from anywhere in the world. Stream us online, charlestonsportsradio.com, through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or again, that free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store and take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Appreciate listeners hanging out with us on this Thursday from at least 8 different states and 3 different countries. They're getting ready for the Olympics. So hello to our listeners elsewhere like Germany and Finland. Getting ready for the Olympics coming up in a few weeks. Everyone's excited. In fact, next Friday begins. All right, on a Throwback Thursday, let's end with this. Pro Football Reference went back to look at all of the stats, or I should say all of the sacks. Now, I think they have the data going back to the 1962 season, I think it is. Somewhere in the early 60s. Because the statistic, the sack, was not actually recorded until 1982, which is hard to believe. Right, that's not that long ago. Less than 40 years ago. Before that, sacks, that was nothing. When they would tackle the quarterback beyond the line of scrimmage, it would just be a tackle. There was nothing. I guess a tackle for a loss, but it wasn't a sack. That wasn't a thing. And Deacon Jones is credited with coming up with that term, and Deacon retired after the 1974 season, but then even so, it took another 8 years before the NFL recognized not only that term, but also that stat. That, yeah, this is something we should be tracking. So we only had the data going back to 1982, and it's hard to come up with an idea of who the best sackers are all time. So Pro Football Reference went back, and they did the research, and they went back and started to track all of the sacks. They have gone now as far back as 1960. And when it comes to career sack totals, not a ton changes. The leaders are still the same. Bruce Smith is the all-time sack leader. He remains that, 200 career sacks. Reggie White is still second all-time, 198. But we now know how many sacks Deacon Jones had in his career. He would be third all-time with 174. Fourth is still Kevin Green. Fifth is still Julius Peppers. But now we know Jack Youngblood would be sixth with 152. Friend of the show, Jack Youngblood, comes on the show every year. Chris Dolman remains seven, but now we know Alan Page would be eighth, 149, right ahead of Lawrence Taylor. Then Michael Strahan, Jason Taylor, Terrell Suggs, mostly more recent guys. Next on the list would be Carl Eller, who was just added to the list. He would be 18th after this research with 134 career sacks. Al Baker is now 21st after this research. Jim Marshall is now 22nd. Claude Humphreys now 24th after this research was done. Not a ton of changes at the very top of the career sack leaders. Bruce Smith and Reggie White are still 1 and 2. But what's most interesting to me, at least, is the single season sack record, which is probably the one that you care most about, that you know most about. Right now, we believe Michael Strahan holds the record. Strahan had 22.5 sacks in 2001. He shouldn't even hold that record because we all know Brett Favre took a dive, allowing Strahan to set the record. And then my boy Jared Allen of the Vikings had 22 sacks, and the Bears, the second half of the final game of the season, did nothing but screen passes so that Jared Allen couldn't break the record. Allen should have broken it in 2011, but it all may be moot anyways, because after this research, Pro Football Reference found that Strahan doesn't actually hold the record. Al Baker holds the record. Back in 1978, when he was the Defensive Rookie of the Year for the Detroit Lions, Al Baker had 23 sacks, the most all time. Now, this is not recognized yet by the NFL, and we'll see if the NFL ever does count these statistics. Pro Football Reference, this isn't just some guy online. This is a legitimate source that went through all the data and the game film, whatever it was, and they came up with these numbers, so I believe them. I buy what they're selling. And they believe that Al Baker, they have him in 1978 when sacks weren't tracked, they credit him with 23 sacks that year, which would be the record. Strahan doesn't deserve the record anyways. And when Al Baker was told, according to reports, he broke down crying when he was made aware that he actually holds the record. He had no idea. He didn't know how many sacks he had in 1978. But when they told him this week, they said that his reaction, he started to cry. He was very happy. It was ecstatic to hear. Three-time Pro Bowler for the Lions, Al Baker may actually hold the record back in 1978. A couple of other things just to touch on now that we have this data. No player has ever led the league in sacks more than twice in a season. But now, according to this data, Deacon Jones is the only player to do it more than twice. Not only did Deacon Jones do it twice, he led the league in sacks five times. No other player has ever done it more than twice. Deacon did it five times. He also had three of the top eight sack seasons all time. He was incredible. And Jack Youngblood, now that we know his stats, I think historically, this will be an interesting topic. We'll have to do this on next Thursday. Which team has produced the best pass rushers? I think it's the Rams. The Vikings are also up there. The Steelers as well. But now that we have this historical data, Youngblood and Deacon Jones, right? The Rams had a couple of great ones back then. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston. However you listen to your podcast, search us ESPN Radio Charleston. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we have to say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the Moore Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.